Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, hi, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me once again today. Always a pleasure to have you with me. I assume if you're listening to this that you're a small to medium-sized privately held business owner. And I'll also assume that at some point you may be considering different strategies to exit. Obviously, it was Exit Coach Radio Show, right? So what I'd like you to do is grab a pen and a pad of paper and prepare to take some notes as my next guest, John Homan, who has been involved in many facets with businesses for many, many years, talks to us about some SBA loan workouts. And we'll probably cover some other topics when it comes to financing as well. So, John, thanks so much for joining me once again, and a pleasure to have you with me.
Thanks, Bill. I'm happy to be here, and we're going to talk about an exit that sometimes you haven't planned for, and that is that you've got this great idea, you've gone out and either purchased a business or maybe started a business on your own, and you don't have the capital to get it all done yourself, and one of the alternatives you consider is getting an SBA loan. Many of us have heard of it. A few of us have actually gotten one. There's about 50,000 new SBA loans every year. And they vary in size and vary in programs. They're typically better rate than other types of financing. And because the way the program works for it's called a 7A loan, which is a business loan as opposed to a real estate loan, you've got 10 years to pay it back. The bad news with an SBA loan is they want you to personally guarantee it. And what that means is you're not only signing your name to say if the business fails, you're going to find some other way to pay it back, but in some cases, they'll make you sign an agreement to put a mortgage or a lien on your home. They'll have your wife sign the guarantee as well as yourself, and that can give you pause. And I've known more than one situation where the wife has refused to sign, and the loan never happens because she's just not willing to take that risk. So what we're going to talk about today is what happens when you get that loan and you've got the money, you've employed it, and the plans don't work out the way you expected, and the business starts to go the wrong way. And
awesome. So let's talk, John, before we jump into that. You know, one of the things our listeners listen to a lot of different advisors and authors and other people who deal with businesses, and I know, you know, your focus is in we're helping businesses in the exit planning. So you're a perfect guest for this show. And I know that, you know, one of the things that we talk about a lot is that if you think you're just going to set your business up and sell it, go out and sell it in the marketplace, you might find out there's so much competition. And you would know this because of your affiliation with business brokerage and all this kind of stuff. But what's the percentage for our listeners before we get into this strategy? What's the percentage of business owners that come to someone like an M&A or business brokerage firm that actually end up selling their business through that firm? And second part of that is, why is the percentage, and I think you're going to tell me a low percentage, but why is the percentage so low? Why do so many business owners not end up selling to an outside buyer?
Well, you know, so often we set up a business that we have great expectations for, and over time those expectations aren't realized, and what we end up with is a job. In other words, we show up to the business every day, we do what we need to do, we make enough money to survive, but there's really not a lot of profit. So when you look at that business as an outside person looking to buy a business, how much are you willing to pay to buy a job? And the answer is, you're typically not. If you could go earn an equal amount or even just a little less by being employed by somebody else, why would you take all the risks that go with running your own business? So, you know, a vast majority of businesses, well over half, are not saleable, because, at least in the Main Street business area, because they don't make enough money to give to make it a viable investment for an outsider. On top of that, the majority of business owners think that selling a business is easy, and they'll take on the job when the time comes to sell the business themselves and not employ an intermediary to make that happen. And as a result, they find out that it's not easy, that selling a business is a job just like the job they do every day, and they find that they don't have time to do both. In addition to that, they take every comment that a potential buyer makes personally,
right.
And they get all upset and concerned. And, you know, you told me my baby is ugly, and I don't ever want to talk to you again. Well, and that's just the nature.
What do you mean it's not worth?
Of the world.
You know, what do you mean it's not worth? You know, five times net profits. What do you mean?
Yeah.
Really, really good points. And one thing, you know, to highlight what you said there, just to bring this back, as you said, well over one half of those who approach a business, well over one half, don't end up selling, either because, you know, the business is unattractive, let's say, to a buyer, or not profitable enough, or there's too many skeletons in the closet, let's say, when they go through their due diligence. And there's a lot of competition out there, right? That's the other side of it, is you're not the only
sure.
business up for sale.
That's very true. Yep.
So it's important to have these other alternative methods in your quiver, you know, to know about what else is out there, right? And that's where this the SBA loan strategy could work.
Sure. Just to hammer home your point, even business intermediaries who turn down many businesses that people come to them and ask, want to be represented, even though we turn down lots that we know just aren't saleable, we can't always sell every business we list, because there just isn't that buyer out there that's looking to make that investment. And the typical time to sell a business is nearly a year from the time it's listed till we actually close escrow and a new owner takes control. So it's a daunting task, and not one that should be taken on lightly.
Yeah, and again, it's not anything a business owner should take personally if their business doesn't sell or isn't able to be sold, or if they hear some things about it. It's a lot of times it's poor planning up front. People have an unrealistic expectation. They think it's like their house. I'm going to list it, and in 4 weeks I'm going to be handing over the keys to somebody and done with it. And like you said, a year is the average timeline. That's a long time to keep working. And by the way, it's not like your regular job slows down while you're doing all this gathering of information and courting people and discussing things with people. So it really is a difficult time for a lot of people.
Well, yeah, and to the point, one of the reasons why you need to start planning your exit so long before you actually exit, you know, 3 to 5 years in order to have really a successful exit, is because for a majority of small business owners, they mentally leave the business long before they decide to sell it. And by that I mean they're burned out, they're tired, they've had setbacks, and now everything else in the world looks more interesting than the business they go into every day. So they walk in the door, they go through the motions, the clients that have stuck with them for a long time realize they're not getting the attention that they were getting before, they start looking around for someplace else to get the same goods or services. And the business trend lines start to go the wrong way. And if you think it's hard to sell a business when things are good, when the numbers are all going the wrong way, it becomes almost impossible because everybody wants to drive that trend line onto the future. And if the trend line is down, you know, you're forecasting serious trouble ahead. So.
Yeah, so again, one of the things I try to focus on with this show is you know, we've all, you know, if you've ever been in a, let's say, a country club type of environment, you know the guy in the corner over there who sold his business for, you know, a ridiculous multiple. There's always that guy, right, or that lady, you know, that person who lucked out, who everything worked out. And a lot of times it's because they were smart in the way they developed and set up and ran their business and had it ready for sale. But what about the others? You know, what about all the others? Because there's a huge wave of people, baby boomers, that are reaching towards retirement age, and they're reaching that burnout stage, and they're saying, you know, I can't liquidate it. There's not enough value there. I need to either have someone continue to run it or manage it or take it over. But I'd sure like it if they'd put some skin in the game, right?
Sure.
However, my employees don't have that money. My kids don't have that money. So how am I going to raise some capital and have the company pay that back? But again, there are some risks. So that brings us to our topic of the day, the SBA loan workouts. Is that becoming, or has it become a common strategy? I mean, interest rates are low, and it's a 10-year note is pretty attractive, especially if you can prepay it if things are great.
Sure. Well, in addition to what you just said, one of the most attractive ways to sell a business is for the purchaser to take out an SBA loan to make that purchase. And the result of that, instead of you as the seller needing to carry back a whole bunch of the sales price because, A, the buyer doesn't have the money, or B, he's so concerned that the business is going to go the wrong way that he wants you as the seller to share the risk. You know, it's a way to get cash in your pocket without taking on all that risk yourself. We'll give you two recent situations. We sold an M&A transaction here, and the buyer, there was one segment of the business that the M&A, that the acquirer didn't want. And so we ended up working with the seller, and one of his managers went and got an SBA loan and bought that little teeny segment of the business and was able to carry it forward. So there's all kinds of situations where the SBA loan as a strategy makes sense. You know, where I develop, there's only six or eight of us in the country that actually do this kind of work on a regular basis, and it's the SBA loan workout situation, and where I developed a lot of expertise in it is in this little recession we had a few years ago where hundreds and thousands of businesses were being forced to close because the economy got so bad. One quick little story, there's a franchise system that sold tanning services, and not only is that a discretionary purchase and tends to go down when the economy is not good, that the Surgeon General came along and determined that tanning was bad for you, and they put an excise tax on all tanning services, so it made a bad business even worse. And so we took 50 franchisees in this one system and worked them through and got them out of their loan without that big scary I'm going to lose my house situation. And many cases, we got them out of their SBA loan for between $10,000 and $20,000, never showed up on their credit report, and in some cases, the business even continued on. So it's not as scary a situation as the bank will lead you to believe, but it's an interesting path that needs to be charted in order to successfully get out the other side if your business is not working out and you're not able to repay the loan that you promised to pay.
Let's kind of start with the nuts and bolts, John. So what we all know, you know, with the SBA, Small Business Administration, you know, a long time ago when it first started, probably in I think it was the 40s, guaranteed loans itself from the government to business owners. That's no longer the case now.
Sure.
They now back up loans that are made by banks, right? So that's
correct.
So yeah, let's talk a little bit about, you talked about the 7A loans, personally guaranteed. And so what is this strategy? What does an SBA loan work out?
Okay, so first off, you did a pretty good job of explaining how the SBA works today. Every bank that hangs a sign on their wall that says we're an SBA certified or an SBA preferred lender, it's a misnomer. While they're signed up for the program and use the SBA forms and have to get approval for the guarantee, every bank is making an independent credit decision based upon their own portfolio and willingness to take risks. So the term SBA loan is not a generic term that means the same thing wherever you go. The SBA guarantee is what's called a credit enhancement to the bank. So the bank is doing all the same underwriting that it does for any other loan, and then they're adding the enhancement of the personal guarantee and the guarantee from the SBA if the loan doesn't get paid, that the government's going to reimburse the bank. But what that means for you as a borrower is that the bank is no longer chasing you for the unpaid balance. The federal government is. And if you don't address that fairly quickly, it gets turned over to the Department of Treasury, and they're one of the world's mm-hmm. largest collection agencies, and they're very good at it. They will make your life very uncomfortable. But there is a way to work with the SBA to get released from the loan without ever having to go to that step of having the Department of Treasury knocking on your door and threatening to take your car, your house, and your boat.
What we're assuming now for the balance of this conversation is someone has taken out an SBA loan at their level. They've gone through jumped through all the hoops. They've personally guaranteed it, all that kind of stuff, and now they want to get out of that arrangement, right? Why would they want to get out of that arrangement?
Typically what happens is the business plan isn't working. The sales aren't what's expected. You're having trouble meeting payroll. And one of the big mistakes that so many people make is they start doing things like tapping their 401k or their IRA, and they start taking those funds out and using them to try to help a failing business. Well, not only are there horrible tax consequences to that, one of the things that the federal government is precluded from being able to touch are those protected retirement accounts. So you deplete those, and the business is still going the wrong way, and in the end you end up personally bankrupting yourself, and you still have this loan to pay, and you still have this federal guarantee. So the better strategy is to try to be realistic about where the business is going. And if things aren't going well and you don't have a plan that's working to make things better, stop the bleeding. One of the first things you can do, I never tell anybody not to pay their bills on time, but if you miss up to three SBA loan payments, they pretty much will do nothing. So that becomes a source of cash flow for you for a little while. The other side of that is the bank will not take you seriously that you're in distress if you've paid your loan on time every month, because their opinion is if you found a way to pay it last month, you'll find a way to pay it this month. And until you can demonstrate distress to the lender, they won't talk to you. Now, the flip side of that is when the SBA guaranteed the loan, they didn't provide for any relief for the bank if things aren't paid on time. And it, by that I mean, if you want to go to the bank 12 months into your 10-year loan and say, you know, we just need a little time. Can I get some relief on this loan, maybe skip a few payments, maybe restructure the loan? The answer, frankly, from the bank is no. The reason is because if they modify your payment terms, they are jeopardizing the guarantee from the federal government that they'll be repaid if you fail. So there's no incentive for them to work with you to modify the loan to make things better. So don't count on that happening, because it likely won't. There are two things a bank can do. They can give you a three-payment skip, or they can do interest only for 12 months without the SBA approvals. Any other variation to the loan requires the SBA to approve it. And with 50,000 new loans generated every year and not nearly enough employees at the SBA, the chances of a loan being modified, or an acceptance of a variation being accepted by the SBA, are between zero and none. So it doesn't happen. So what has to happen is you have to be able to demonstrate to the bank that the loan is, the business is in distress, and then the bank is pretty limited as to what they can do. So they'll typically want to push you into the liquidation process. Now, the sad thing about most of our businesses, the actual tangible assets of the business are worth almost nothing. Take a look at a restaurant. When you walk into a restaurant, you look around at all the chairs and tables and all the equipment that's in there. Imagine what that stuff is worth if we have to have an auction tomorrow. Everything that's attached, like the hood that's over the grill, etc., that technically belongs to the landlord, because in the lease it's an attachment. So that's not saleable. So you're selling chairs, tables, flatware, and at a maybe a got a $500,000 loan to get your business started, all those assets may be worth $10,000, maybe $15,000 at the most at auction. So the amount of money that's going to remain unpaid after liquidating the business is going to be most of the loan. So one strategy that's been effective in a failing business is we'll often go out and see if the current business owner has a friend or business associate that is in a position to buy the assets of the business. We'll go make that offer to the SBA because we know what the auction value is, and usually the lender will accept that. Now, that friend or family member can continue that business on. The employees often don't even know that the business has been sold, because one of the things that can be transferred is the name of the business. So now we've eliminated the business from the equation. Oftentimes, the former business owner has a relationship with the person that bought those assets and can even continue working in the business. Now, the SBA looks at your sources of repayment, but one of the things they can't stop you from doing is working in the business that you've worked in the past. So you continue on, you have a job with that person, and maybe down the road you'll be in a position to reacquire your old business without that big SBA loan payment every month. Now, once we get to that point, the SBA requires that two forms be submitted. One is a personal financial statement called the Form 770, and the other one's a statement of hardship, which is basically a one-page statement. But with those two documents, I have gone in and taken $1 million, $1.5 million loan, and I've gotten it settled for under $20,000. And the reason is because if you don't have the ability to repay, the SBA would rather take whatever they can and move on than to make your life miserable. Now, if you ignore the situation and you try to hide from the debt, the SBA doesn't waste much time in turning it over to Treasury, and Treasury has a long-term horizon. I've got one person that owns a condo in Playa del Rey up in Los Angeles area. They ignored the loan. And now the Treasury has come back and said, no, we're in no hurry. Whenever you die, we'll just take whatever the equity position is in that piece of property. Now, if they would have addressed that in the beginning, that wouldn't be the situation. So
John, this is an area where listeners, you really need somebody who's been down the road with this and is taking care of this. And unfortunately, we're out of time for today, but I just want to leave our listeners with this thought, and that is, if you're in a situation where, you know, your exit didn't quite work out the way you thought, and now you have the Department of Treasury on your back because you have SBA loans, you need to know who to contact, and John Homan is an expert in this field. John, what's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you about this kind of a situation, or about, you know, you deal with happy exits too?
Yeah, the majority of my work is in the traditional good news, let's get it sold and move on with your life. So the best way is contact me by email, John Homan, JohnHoman at gmail.com. Call me, 619-279-7522.
Very simple, very good, and great information, John. I apologize for us having to rush through it because it's very detailed, and you did a great job explaining it all. But I really appreciate you coming on with this facet of planning. And, of course, you're available to talk to people about, as I said, about traditional exits. But in this situation, there's not many people to talk to. So thank you so much for joining me today and bringing us up to date on this potential strategy for our listeners.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. My next guest has been with us many times. We're going to talk today with Vincent Mastrovito. And he's joining us from Grand Rapids, Michigan, from Prometheus Partners. And we're going to talk about business attractiveness. Now, again, one of the things when you're building your business, and as Mr. Homan just shared with us, less than half of businesses that go to a business broker end up selling. And it's not necessarily the business broker's fault. They're doing what they can. It's really lack of planning sometimes. And again, as he mentioned, one of the things you need to do 3 to 5 years in advance is start planning to make your business attractive. So Vince, thanks so much for joining us once again. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Hey, Bill, thank you so much for having me on the show again. Really enjoy catching up with you and talking about this important topic and speaking to your listeners. So thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Always my pleasure. And for listeners, you can visit our website, exitcoachradio.com, or we'll talk about Vince's website later, and find many, many interviews that he's done about a variety of topics. So today we want to talk about business attractiveness. You know, what makes a business attractive from a buyer's perspective, right?
Exactly. I think there's several things that really makes a business attractive. Certainly in some of our previous conversations, Bill, we've talked about some of the things that we do look at when you are getting ready to transition, sell your business, or even if it's going to your kids or whatnot, is how attractive does that look to a new owner? And that owner could be anybody at all. And so a couple of the areas that we really try to focus on, at least initially, are things like their business factors. And what we mean by business factors are things like, well, how long have you really been in business? How strong is your management? Things like that. What kind of customer loyalty do you feel that you have? What does your branding look like? Customer diversification. And then we actually go into things like, what are some of the forecasts of your industry and your business? What are some of the local economies that could impact your business in the short and long term? How big is your footprint in the area that you have? Are you in a local community throughout the state, throughout the region, throughout the country, or international? What are some of the investor considerations? What types of products or services are you offering that are new that keep coming to the market? And then what type of different revenue processes or strategies do you have, whether in existing markets or new markets that you might want to get into? So we think by looking at there are a lot of factors, and then there's sub-factors within there. But I think it's important for a business owner to make sure that they understand that the first attractiveness is going to be from the majority of it is going to be from the financial side, and if the purchaser doesn't see the sustainability from a financial perspective, then the conversation in most cases will probably be a pretty short-lived conversation or a substantially lower offer, you know, to the seller.
Yeah, and not all of those factors are in the control of the business owner. For instance, the state of the local or national economy, and maybe, for instance, financing factors, are interest rates low or high. But there, many of those factors, of course, are in the control of the business owner. And you know, what would you say some of the top 3 to 5 factors a business owner can control in that, you know, long list of things that make a business attractive?
I think a lot of things that that the owner should be focusing on primarily would be, first and foremost, is how strong is your management? People want to come in and know that they have, you know, they don't have a huge, not only is it strong management, but it's not an aging management base or employment base that they have. So they want to make sure that is extremely solid and it has great continuity. They're all working together and communicating. And then I think a couple of the other ones are going to be your customer diversification. When I mean customer diversification, it's kind of a twofold question, because it's important to understand, do you have one particular customer that is driving the lion's share of your revenue, or do you have one particular industry that is driving part of your revenue? Because if that industry is a cyclical industry and it's at its peak or whatnot, then I think, you know, you're going to have a little bit more of a challenge because you still have lack of diversification. And then I think, what are some of your revenue drivers? I mean, what types of new things, products, or services are you bringing to the existing market that you have? And what are some of the new products and services that you could bring to new markets in your area? And I think when you start focusing on those 3 or 4 different areas, I think you can make a dramatic impact in your business and really increase the value and its attractiveness to an outside purchaser.
And part of this, kind of the flip side of making a business attractive, is taking away some of the risks that make a business unattractive, right?
Yeah, that is correct. You certainly have to a sense, as we call it, you have to de-risk the business and make sure it's kind of, to your point that you made a minute or so ago, is we want to try to make it as less impacted by economic conditions as we possibly can. Nothing will be completely economic proof where you're not going to have some decline, but certainly that goes along with a lot of the diversification, products and services. How are you streamlining your systems and processes? Are there too many costs that are going on with that area? What are your conversion rates if you're looking at bidding processes? Do you have a very low bidding process, so you'd want to get that up to, you know, probably a more national level? How do you compare financially from a profit perspective, revenue perspective, and in other areas to your industry? So when you look at your business as an attractive business, you should be really comparing yourself to like-kind businesses, both in size and geographical area, though it also would be great to do it on a national level. And how do you compare to those people? And when you can compare or exceed those expectations, I think personally that is a great story, and that is a great conversation to have with any potential new buyer, and that they would feel very comfortable understanding just how you do compare to your overall industry.
You know, Vince, one of the things I've been hearing a lot about, especially the last few years, is the impact on valuation of some kind of a recurring revenue stream. And a lot of business owners that I talk to, I'm sure you too, say, well, I don't really have anything that's a subscription-based or a recurring revenue stream. How important do you think that is in that attractiveness to a buyer?
I think it's very important, and I say that with a disclosure. We're not talking about 100% reoccurring revenue here, so we're not talking about going from 100% transactional businesses, which a lot of them are, especially in the manufacturing world or whatnot. But if you could even get up to 5, 10, or maybe even 15% of your revenue that is reoccurring, some type of subscription-based process, whether it's through your website for information or servicing or whatever, and you're charging a monthly fee or an annual fee for folks to have access to this information, I've seen it across the board in several different industries, and it is working quite well. So I think, the first clarification is you're not going to do it at 100% because probably your industry won't allow it in most cases. But if you can at least get to that 5 to 15% of your revenue or increase it, then I think that you're really showing a new buyer that this thing not only has sustainability, but it's very attractive also.
Yeah, and conversely, people like John Warlow that you and I know have written books about the impact of taking your completely service business and making a product out of a service, if you can, or that makes a business more saleable and attractive. So you can kind of go either way. I guess the moral of the story is the mix of reoccurring revenue through some kind of an ongoing service contract, if you can put that together, and also having, if you're completely a service business and turning that into a product-based business that can be sold throughout the world, for instance, making a product out of your service, which is kind of the same thing, I guess, then all of those things might help you to stand out from the sea of sameness that we see in so many service-oriented businesses these days.
I would agree. I would agree 100% on that, Bill. I just think that it's you have to separate yourself from your competition somehow, and I think every business owner really has to spend the time, no matter whether it's a service-oriented business, manufacturing, whatever that might be, you really have to think about what really makes us different. And that's really a branding question. Like, what is your unique story to your clients? What makes you different? And when you do that, I think that also creates a lot of uniqueness and ability for a new buyer to really see how much they can really expand it. And, no business owner wants to come in and be told that they have an ugly baby. And so I think you've heard that before, haven't you? It happens more frequently than I would like to admit, but it always can be fixed. And I think once they understand what their options are, which is always the key, is making sure they're open to a collaborative discussion, it really does help them understand what it is that they can do. I'll give you a brief example. Is we are working with a business, and this happens to be an insider transaction that we're selling to two key people. And we actually ran just some meetings this morning about talking to them about changing some of their culture and management within the system with some of the key people, and met with them for about 2 hours. And they really saw the value in it, because at first they were a little bit more defensive in it, thinking that it was going to be, just more of a criticizing. And I said, no, we're not running these meetings like that. This is open discussion, and we want your feedback, and we need it. And after they left the meeting, they really felt that they had a better handle on what they needed to do to bring this transaction and carry it all the way through. And I just think when you have those types of discussions, I think that you're in a much better position as a business owner. And let's face it, when you put 25 to 40, 50 years into a business, you deserve to get the equity out of that business. because you put the time in. But just sometimes you got to take it a little bit further to get to the finish line, and it's certainly well worth it to you and your family to do so.
Yeah, you know, one thing I really like about your style, Vince, and I'm sure your clients echo this, is, you know, it's one thing to hire somebody who has a breadth of knowledge. It's another thing to hire somebody who has that knowledge but doesn't use it. Instead, they come in with the right questions. An advisor who comes in and asks the business owner the right questions that make the business owner think, because let's face it, our clients know their business a lot better than you or I would as we walk in off the street. But if they don't always have time to look up and ponder these questions and think about what their business looks like to a potential buyer, and they need to do that good and early so that they can work on making that business much more attractive. So what I'm assuming is that you have some of these tools, checklists, the right questions, all that type of thing, to help a business owner address this as a buyer would, so they can start, you know, maybe their baby isn't so beautiful right now, but they can start working on a program to make it more attractive over time, right?
Absolutely. I think, and thank you so much for the compliment. I truly appreciate that. But I think it is important for the owner to really to self-assess themselves. If you can self-assess yourself, no matter what you're doing, but in this particular environment, I think what you allow yourself to do is take a step back and really understand, you know, these are the directions I want to go, and these are the things that really need to be fixed, and these are the things that are going well. From that analysis, what we have found is a healthy discussion with owners as to, okay, here's a list of, let's just say, 10 or 15 items. Let's pluck off one or two of them at a time, and let's really work on how we can get them to a much better level where we can bring up your score on your attractiveness so that we can potentially get a much higher multiple or revenue stream for you to be more successful. Because, again, let's remember, Bill, we know these statistics. The majority of business owners today have 60 to 90% of their net worth wrapped up in their business. The number one reason for exiting a business, according to the Market Pulse quarter one of the M&A industry, is retirement. So if that is really the reason what that's going out there and the feeling that they're getting from their discussions with business owners, then it behooves them to be prudent and build the value of their business so that they have an opportunity to pull more equity out of it, which in return gives them more income for their retirement sustainability for their families.
Yeah, and a prior guest who does mergers and acquisition work, in other words, selling businesses, said the average sale time timeline for a business now is a year from when they first, you know, when they first learn about the business for sale, and those are the ones that are attractive enough to actually sell, which again, what they said and what we all know all too well is well over half of the businesses that approach a seller, whether it's a broker or M&A, depending on their size, don't sell. The ones that do, it can take a year. And if the primary reason some of these, most of these business owners are approaching is retirement, I will guarantee you there is a tired business owner there who doesn't want it to have to take 1 year or even then, maybe not sell. That's a long year.
Yeah, that 12 months will seem almost like an eternity, won't it? Because once
well,
you get to that,
your day-to-day business doesn't stop just because you decide you want to change gears. It's like adding on a whole different job.
Right. Yeah. Just because you hit the wall or you become burned out does not allow you to just disengage from the business altogether. And I think it just goes back, Bill, to our conversations over the last few years, is the sooner you plan, the better off that you will be for everybody that's in the mix, you, your family, the buyer, the employees, the community, the list goes on and on. And I just, Certainly the owners are starting to get the picture, but there's just a lot of work that really just still needs to be done. But we just have to keep educating the bill and just keep moving on, and hopefully they'll understand and take action on it.
Well, and I think, you know, what my experience is that one of the side benefits of doing planning to make your business more attractive, one of the side benefits is that is your business actually can be, you can take control of your business, and actually you might start enjoying your business more. You might, you know, you might solve your burnout problem by taking action to make your business less reliant on you every hour of the day.
Well spoken. I think in many cases you will find that that will happen in many cases, and maybe you're willing to put a little bit more energy into this thing because you actually do have a little bit more free time for you and your family to do some of the other fun things and still make this money over a period of time. And I just think that I haven't seen yet a downside to preparing a business to be sold, make it attractive, make it transferable. I haven't seen a downside in a business owner doing that. And so everything is just pointing to why wouldn't you do it? It just seems like the prudent and smart thing for them to do.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things that we hear in our various, you know, we have, you and I are members of, you know, together several organizations that we hear what the exit planners out there are hearing from their clients in turn. And one of the things that we hear a lot is many business owners don't really have their, you know, their time mapped out. If they sell their business and they don't have to go, you know, they don't have their work to do, they're not very happy because that was their life and it was kind of the game they played every day. But a lot of people just say, I just want some time back in my life. I want to still do what I do. I just don't want to do so much of it. Or maybe I want to cut back the number of duties I do within my business to things that I really enjoyed from the start.
I would agree. I think that's really important for owners to understand and just to have them, you know, resonate with that comment, because I think that it is important that they probably still do have some energy there, and they have certainly some tremendous amount of value and expertise that they can bring back to the table. And I just think that it's really important to, you know, be able to communicate that to them and help them make the decision. You know, it's not my decision to make for them. I am just offering input to help them understand, here's how you're going to get to where you want to go. And as I mentioned to the owners this morning, I said, you can only go at 90 miles an hour for so long. At some point, you will hit the wall. And usually at that case, it's going to be, it runs a higher risk of being more severe to you from a health perspective, potentially, than if you learn to broaden this process out and put the people in place that really need to make this business sustainable over a much longer period of time, far beyond your mortality rate.
Well, I can tell you, I just not long ago turned 60. Where does the time go? And I can tell you, I can't run very far, but I can walk all day long. I can walk fast all day long. I just can't run like I used to. So I hear what you're saying, Vince. With this attractiveness kind of study or index, these types of tools, how do business owners get started on something like that? What's the way that they would they just get in touch with you to find out? Is it at your website? What's the best way for them to find out more about this?
Yeah, they would just want to contact us. They could certainly reach me or reach us through the website of PrometisPartners.com. That's PROMETIS. Partners, plural.com, or email me directly at Vincent@PrometisPartners.com. That would probably be probably the best way. They could email over whatever questions or comments that they would like to have, and we certainly would be more than willing to email them back the responses we have. And if they're interested in engaging in a phone conversation, we could do that, or meet in person, whatever their comfort level is fine with us. And that usually has been working in the past, so I think it would be fine.
Hey, I'll tell you what, listeners, with over 1,000 interviews under my belt, I looked at a lot of websites, and if I had such a thing, I would give an award to PrometheusPartners.com for having the best website out there as far as tools and information. You just done a tremendous job there, Vince, of helping business owners, and a lot of business owners like to do this, just kind of nose around a little bit and really get some value out of the website, which you know, helps them get started on their planning and really get a feel for what's available out there. And that makes it more, that helps create a better relationship for them to then get engaged with you and see that you're willing to give a lot of information out to help business owners. And I salute you for that.
Well, again, thank you so much. I really appreciate the kind words, Bill, that you put out for us. We certainly enjoy talking with your membership and talking with your listeners, and enjoy being part of your program and the process, and just hope that we can continue and just educate people to help them make smarter and wiser decisions.
Always a pleasure, Vince. Thank you so much for joining us once again today, and I look forward to the next time we speak.
Thanks, Bill. Really appreciate it.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this, so stay with us, please.
Hey everybody, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. One of the questions I get asked the most is, how do I grow the value of my business? I'm so busy working in it, I need to work on it. So we've created a special report for you on 10 tips to grow the value of your business. Just text the word DRIVERS to 44222 to get a special free report right to your inbox. That's DRIVERS to 44222. Text DRIVERS to 44222.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.
Hi, everyone. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now, because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our